talking about. So I'm really glad that you you brought that up, because I mean, compared to what,
you know,
somebody
with a 2-year degree who tends not to live in Portland, you know, I mean, they're paid well enough to live in Portland. They should be forced to live in Portland. They don't.
Right.
The one occasion I had to call the police, I got this 6'7" guy straight out of Central Casting, you know, Hitler Jungen, who you know, ran a check on my criminalistic tenant and said, "You shouldn't be renting to these people." And then I sort of got horrified.
Well,
and then
Jeremy, looks like we got the
theme music. You should buy automatic weapons and move to a gated enclave like other white people.
Okay, Jeremy. Well, we got to go. We've got the theme music up. So thank you for calling in. Thank you, everybody else, for calling in. This is Paul Rulin, Wednesday Talk Radio. Bye bye.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Voz Radio, presents our virtual action fundraiser Con la Voz Firme, the power of our voice, on Saturday, September 12th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. streaming online. This virtual event celebrates the work of community leaders and victories in the movement for immigrants and workers' rights. Again, that's Voz Radio presents our virtual action fundraiser Con la Voz Firme, the power of our voice, on Saturday, September 12th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. and streaming online. More information can be found at kibu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Today, our show was taped during the volatile COVID-19 pandemic. With our studio unavailable to us and our commitment to social distancing, we are using the Zoom platform to record today's show.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Our guest today is Marnie Kyle. Appointed to head Washington County's Health Department in 2014, Marnie has a 30-year background in healthcare and management. She has worked in Arizona, Montana, and most recently in Clark County, Washington. She holds bachelor's and master's degrees in nursing from Arizona State University. Welcome, Marnie. Thank you so much for joining us today. We are going to focus most of our time on getting an understanding of how the county has been and is dealing with the pandemic. We are recording this on August 21st, so we're fairly close to on time here. But before we get there, could you give us some background on your department? Just what are the county's Department of Health and Human Services responsibilities?
Sure, Rob, thank you. Thanks so much for inviting me onto your show. I really appreciate it. So Health and Human Services is a really important department in Washington County, one of the largest departments. We have all sorts of services for people. We have behavioral health services, developmental disability services, our public health services, which I think you'll hear a lot about today. We also have disability, aging, and our veteran services, which provide really great help for our veterans, making sure they get all the benefits that they deserve. We also surprisingly have solid waste and recycling, as well as animal services. So the Bonnie L. Hayes Animal Shelter is also part of Washington County Health and Human Services.
I can't recall when Oregon's first noted case of the virus in our county, when it came up. I'm interested to know when and how your department first became aware of COVID-19.
Thanks, Rob. So we had been following COVID-19 beginning when there were cases in Wuhan, China. We have epidemiologists and public health specialists that look worldwide to see what's going on and what could impact Washington County so that we're prepared. But I will never forget the day when I remembered, or when I was notified, February 28th. It happens to be my birthday, and I happened to have been at a national conference for counties in Washington, D.C. when I got that phone call that happy birthday, and we have the first case of COVID in the state of Oregon, when my state staff briefed me about that.
What was your department's initial response? How did you proceed to develop your plan to fight the virus?
So I think when you're first, a lot of responsibility comes with being first. In Washington County, since the beginning, the first thing that we do is, just like any reportable disease, we interview the case and the family. We learn as much as we can about who that person might have been around, who they may have been exposed. In that case, you may remember there were exposures also in Clackamas County, one of our sister counties, and so we worked closely with Clackamas County, and there were also some school involvements because the person happened to work at a school. And so we connected right away with the superintendents and the principals to let them know. And then the other thing that we do is we do what we call contact tracing, which means once we've learned who may have been exposed, we call those people and we talk to them about their potential exposures. We talk to them about the importance of staying home. And then we set up a system where we connect with them each day, sometimes more than once a day, to find out, do they have symptoms? Do they need any help getting to healthcare providers in the area? Do they need to get testing? Do we need to support that? The other thing is if you're a household and nobody can go to work now, we help with things like, do you need rental assistance? Do you need food delivered to your home? So it's quite involved.
It is quite involved. And as you've been doing it since February 28th, it makes me wonder. I mean, I can take a look and I can say, my gosh, 254 full-time people, that's a lot of people doing a lot of things. Tracking and tracing, it seems to me that that's going to put a heck of a demand on your staff.
So before COVID, the public health division, which is one division in my department, had approximately 100 FTE. And those staff were everything from providing WIC services to women, infants, and children, to nurse home visiting, to environmental restaurant inspectors, to people that were doing chronic disease prevention work, like anti-tobacco work. And there were our communicable disease staff, which was about 40 staff. Today, in about 2 months, we've taken that public health division and more than doubled it. We have now 154 staff working just on this COVID issue. So we have 154 new staff who are doing case investigation, contact tracing, supporting people in isolation and quarantine, working with schools to prepare for school reopening, working with our community-based organizations who we couldn't support this response without, to help families who are suffering from COVID or who are in isolation and quarantine, and just helping with the education and outreach that has to be done.
Understood. Adding 150 or so new folks sounds great. So far, does that seem to be adequate?
It was a struggle getting there, but now that we're there, it does seem, because of the partnerships with our community-based organizations like Centro Cultural, Adelante Mujeres, Junior Garcia, Neighborhood Health Center, because of those partnerships, we do seem to be at a pretty good place with staff. We're very proud that we have met the state metric, is that all case investigation and contact tracing will be started within 95% of the time will be started within 24 hours. And we've been 100% to our low of 97% since the beginning.
Wow, excellent. Initially, a lot of places, when the COVID came out, a lot of places found they were low on protective equipment, ventilators, and other essential supplies. Was our county better prepared? How is our current supply of equipment?
So I think that our county and the state of Oregon, our governor jumped right into action and put safety measures in place, including the stay home, save lives orders. And so for Oregon, that kept our case count from spiraling like happened in some other states. So I'm not going to say that wasn't difficult. It was very hard. It was hard for all of us. We missed our family and friends. There was a huge economic impact to those stay-at-home orders. People really suffered, but it did help to keep the Oregon numbers low, and it did help our health care, our hospital capacity to be maintained. So we never actually ran out of things like ventilators. We were concerned about PPE. It was difficult to get for quite a while, but we seem to be over that hump, and we seem to have enough personal protective equipment or PPE in Washington County at this point.
The issue of economy, the economy versus health, is a tough one. Where do you see an appropriate balance between the two for Washington County?
If you look at Washington County, there was very disproportionate impacts of COVID-19 on our Latinx population.
Yes.
And so, that population, they are some of the heroes in our county. They are the essential workers that were taking care of our grandparents, our elderly, our elders in nursing home and assisted living centers. They were keeping our food supply available in Washington County. But that also meant that they were exposed more. So they've had economic impacts of being exposed and not being able to work, because many of those jobs, if you're not there, you don't get paid. And economics also affects health. And so we're constantly trying to figure out, how do we balance safety and health with the economic needs? I'm not gonna say that we've gotten it perfect every single decision, but I think that it's important for our community members to understand, we know that some of this was really painful, and we're really trying to make those decisions, keeping in mind that balance of health with the economics.
Given how painful those struggles can be for so many people, yes, what has your department found in how our Washington County residents are doing at complying with the various orders and guidelines, be it masks, social distancing, et cetera?
So we do have an enforcement arm to our emergency response and public health to this COVID-19 pandemic. And what I would say is, for the most part, we're darn proud of Washington County as a community. For the most part, people are wearing their masks. People are thinking about physically distancing, washing their hands, extra cleaning. So most people in Washington County are cooperating, complying, and really trying to keep things safe for all of us, to help all of us have healthy lives. There is some occasional pushback. And so what we, our approach to that is to provide education and support. We've also used some of our, Washington County did receive some of the federal CARES funding. And so we've used some of that funding to try to address some of these economic impacts through funds that go to our business recovery centers, funds that go to directly to some of our community-based organizations. And so we're trying to also address it in those ways. But I'm really proud of how our community has come together.
I'm glad to hear that. You had actually brought up something I was going to ask, and I'd like to get a little deeper into it if we can. You noted that the Latinx population in our county were more profoundly and more in numbers, larger. They were affected disproportionately. And my understanding is there's a disproportionate impact on the African American community in our country as well. Do you have any understanding as to why that is?
Yeah, I think that what this pandemic has done is really highlighted what we've already known for a long time, that our Black, Indigenous, and other communities of color, like our Latinx communities, are disproportionately impacted economically, educationally, and every health indicator that you look at, you're gonna see a disproportionate impact. And I think what's important for folks to understand is that the reason that those impacts are disproportionate, it's not because of their behaviors or because of their race or ethnicity. It's because they are in positions where they can't necessarily do what a lot of us were able to do, which was to stay home and to stay safe. They had to go to their jobs. They had to go and take care of others and perform these essential functions, whether it was in healthcare, whether it was in processing plants where our food is getting packaged and processed, whether it was in our fields to make sure that we have food available, not only for Washington County, but for the nation. So I think that's really important to understand.
So you're clarifying that it definitely isn't a biological issue, it's much more a sociological issue.
Yes.
And hopefully we're learning to address that. Thank you.
Yes.
We are taping at the very end of August. School is starting soon. In Oregon, I understand that we're not going to have in-person classes at least until mid-November. That's the last I've heard. Health versus the economy is a tough issue, as we've been saying. So is health versus having kids in school.
Yes.
How do you think we should be dealing with this dilemma?
So I think, once again, I have to brag about Washington County. I think it's a really collaborative relationship between our schools, the school superintendents, and Washington County, both our elected officials as well as our public health officials. We have been communicating weekly since this began with our school officials, and we have been reviewing their plans so that when in-person school services do come back, we feel confident that they have good plans in place to reduce the risk of transmission of COVID-19. Our schools have decided at this point to really help parents in their planning to do comprehensive virtual learning between now and mid-November. And so we're working with them so that we can watch the data, watch what's happening with the prevalence of this disease in our community, and help them and support them as they make these important decisions moving forward. You're right, social, emotional, developmental learning is just as important. And so we, like everybody, really want to move to a place where it's safe for kids to get back together in a classroom with their teachers.
Will you be in a position, as long as it's in-home learning, will you be in a position to monitor some of those psychological and behavioral impacts that we think might be happening to the kids in our county?
It's been a little bit of a struggle. We don't necessarily monitor that, but you know what we have noticed is that once schools closed, we're seeing things like domestic violence and child abuse reporting going down. And we know that those kinds of those abuses typically go up when people are under stress. And we believe it is because people aren't, it's not as visible. The mandatory reporters like teachers aren't seeing these kids. So we do worry about that. We also worry about mental health and stress just in general in our community. So we are watching our crisis lines, our suicide prevention lines. We haven't been seeing an increase, but we're worried that it's more because there might be less outreach and education going on because of less physical closeness. And so we are trying to get information out through our websites about the importance of calling for help when you need help, whether it's abuse or whether it's feelings of stress and anxiety anything else that people need help with.
And what is that website address for our listeners, please?
Thank you. So our Washington County website is www.co.washington.or.us. And from there, you can get specifically to all types of services, including specific information pages on what's happening with COVID.
That's excellent. Thank you. Since March, what has your department learned about needs and resources in our county that you didn't know before?
I think that we've known that there has been great need in our county, and COVID really exacerbated that, particularly when we think about things like access to healthy, nutritious food. There's been a big increase in the need for access to food services. Our food banks have been really just slammed. I think that those kind of needs have really surfaced because of this COVID. But I don't think that there has been needs that we weren't aware of. It's more that they have been exacerbated because of COVID. Food, housing is a huge need. We've really had to support our homeless community, and we have three strategies in place to really support our homeless community because we're worried when people are in large camps where they can't physically distance, they don't have adequate sanitary methods, they don't have masks, those kind of things. So we've set up a safe sleeping village. We have hotel vouchers that we're offering to homeless people, especially who are older or disabled. And then we've been working with our Family Promise shelter providers to also provide services for homeless folks.
Experts continue to debate what we should expect over the fall and winter months. Second coming or continuation of the first wave. What do you expect to see happen in our county and our country in the fall and winter?
Boy, that's the million-dollar question. So with my crystal ball, the things that we're worried about is we're entering influenza season. Mm-hmm. And so we are very worried about entering influenza season and how do you differentiate between influenza and COVID. And not only that, but it's devastating to get either of those diseases, but to have both of them could be really devastating to someone's health, especially if they're already vulnerable, if they have heart disease or diabetes. So we're really encouraging everyone, when it's available, get your influenza vaccination. It's really important. It helps differentiate and it helps protect you from another disease that kills Americans every year. The other thing is that I think that this is with us for a long time. There was a recent study released by OHA that shows about 1% of the Oregon population has likely had COVID. That means 99% of us have probably not been infected yet and we're vulnerable. And so I think we're going to be living with things like physical distancing and masks. We should always do good hand cleaning, right? Hand washing. And we should always be really good about cleaning our touchable surfaces. But I think that we're going to be living this for a very long, living with this virus for a very long time, and have to learn to manage how we go about our business and return to whatever the new normal is.
Understood. You talk about the 1% that of Oregonians that have had COVID. Have we figured out yet whether having COVID provides you with immunity?
That is still a question that researchers internationally and nationally are looking at. They have done some studies, and they can see that approximately 6 weeks after infection, people do develop antibodies. We don't know how long those antibodies protect you at this point. So that's something we'll have to follow the research over time.
Marnie, in addition to hand washing, which you're right, we should all do all the time, cleaning surfaces, social distancing, mask wearing, avoiding large groups as per the governor's guidelines, do you have any additional ideas to help ourselves and those we care about?
I think, you know, that's a really important question. I think number one is remembering that a lot of this we're doing because we do have friends and family and a community that we care about. And so these things are pretty simple to protect ourselves and protect the people that we love. Wearing a mask, it's pretty simple, really. And so we're asking people to do that. To be physically distanced, but that doesn't mean you have to be socially distanced. You can call people, you can have small get-togethers with cohorts that you're with all the time. Do it, you know, sit outdoors, enjoy each other's company. But I think that really remembering we're doing this not just for ourselves, but we're doing this because we care about our loved ones, our family, our friends, our community. And so I think keeping that in mind is probably the most important thing.
Marnie, one of the bigger issues in dealing with this virus is the issue of testing. And there are several issues around that. Perhaps the most important one is, what are we testing for? There's different kinds of tests, and I'm interested to know how effective they are.
So really, I would say there's two categories of testing that people are talking about and hearing about. One is we're testing for the actual virus. So that's usually a swab that's at the back of your throat or through your nose. And that's actually testing for the virus. And that test is very accurate. There's no such thing as a false positive with that test. So there is a very, very small false negative rate, but there is no false positive. So it's a very accurate, efficient, effective test. The second test that you hear about a lot is antibody testing. So an antibody test is a test that is telling us, have you had COVID-19 at some point in the past? It could have been the recent past, 5-6 weeks ago, or it could have been 6 months ago or a year ago. People are really interested in that test as well. And that test is where we're seeing some differences in effectiveness reliability in that test. And so that test is not as reliable. And part of it is because we don't know how long antibodies last. In other words, how long people are immune to this. And so we really don't use antibody testing to help us understand the prevalence or the amount of disease that's in our community. It's more right now looking at it from a research perspective so that we can learn over time more about how immunity holds or doesn't hold.
When I think of the issues of getting back to the new normal, I recognize that Washington County is part of a tri-county area that covers the city of Portland, the biggest, well, not necessarily, but the largest population center, why don't we say. My understanding, too, is that Portland's reopening is tied to all three counties meeting the governor's requirements. How are the other counties doing in compared to the wonderful impact that your department is having on Washington County?
Well, I think that, you know, it's, we are tied with Multnomah County. So Clackamas, Washington, and Multnomah County are all tied together as far as our ability to move into phase two.
Yes.
Multnomah County does have higher prevalence right now. So they have a higher case rate, meaning number of cases per 100,000 than Washington or Clackamas County. But I would tell you that Washington County, if we were just looking at our case rate, at our numbers, we don't meet the criteria yet either. And so at this point, Multnomah County isn't holding us up. There could come a point in time where Multnomah County is holding us up. But the other thing that's important to understand is we work together as a tri-county region. We have a tri-county public health system. We each have our own staff, but we work together. And so there, because this virus doesn't understand borders or county borders. And so we have to work together. Their success is really important to Washington County residents. We have family and friends there, but we also go back and forth and work in one another's counties. We go to each other's restaurants. And so it makes sense. It's frustrating sometimes that we're tied together, but we're working closely together to support one another so that we can all move into phase two.
Again, Marnie, thank you very, very much for joining us today. We've learned a great deal. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to get in touch with us on our website, insidewashco.org, or contact me directly by email. That's rob@insidewashco.org.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
Do you believe in the importance of community radio?
Of course I do.
Then show your support today by donating online at kabu.fm and help us meet our fall fundraising goal of $80,000. We can only get there through the support of people like you. So